You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and Friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism, broadcasting live from Florida's Sun Coast on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's the travel guy, Roy Lowy.
We're happy to be with you today. We took a couple of weeks break, but we're back and on the roll again. So thank you, Mike. And my guests today will be Evan Eggers, Amy Kotkin, Kay Harwell Fernandez, Sandra Feeney, and Michelle Newman when we come back.
This is the story of Mary and Larry. They had cabin fever so bad it was scary.
We need a vacation, a place warm and sunny, a place that's fun for not much money.
Let's escape the cold and the snow. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary, Chicago.
Sky Value now offers great rates from convenient Gary, Chicago airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete, Fort Lauderdale, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary, Chicago airport works for me. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Sky Value sure saved us money.
You're so smart.
And so is my honey.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after. Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
This segment of the show is brought to you by ShoreCruise.com, your online cruise superstore, and in part by USA 3000 Airlines, offering low-cost fares from St. Petersburg, Orlando, Fort Myers, Fort Lauderdale to seven cities. And you can check out their schedule on our website or USA3000.com. Mr. Evan Eggers, president of SureCruise.com, is on the phone with the latest cruise news. Welcome, Evan.
Thank you, Roy.
Lots of things happening out there in the last couple of weeks since we've been away.
Oh, yeah, I know. We take a couple of weeks off. The news tends to pile up, doesn't it?
It sure does. And the latest thing, of course, is that the QM2 actually sailed under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, this is very exciting news, especially on the West Coast. It's the first time that the Queen Mary 2 has been to San Francisco, and it's the only time she'll be on the West Coast this year. So, of course, the spectacle of that really just beautiful ship sailing under the Golden Gate Bridge was very, very newsworthy and received lots of coverage. The ship actually spent the night in San Francisco as well, which was nice. So lots of sightseers and ship lovers had a good chance to take a look.
Yeah, it must have been. I can remember I was on an aircraft carrier, and we were in Australia, and we couldn't get under the bridge. And everybody thought in Australia, wait a minute, this is the biggest bridge in the world. I mean, how come you can't get the ship underneath?
And so, well, it's funny, too, if you look at some of the news photos that came out of the Queen Mary 2 passing under the Golden Gate, it really looks like a close call, even though obviously they knew there was no problem.
Yeah, they were probably leaning over to see if they were going to catch something.
Exactly. And I remember being on the Queen Mary 2 when she came under the Verrazano Narrows Bridge in New York and sailing into Manhattan. And it was the same situation. You stand out on deck, you're like, wow, we're really going to make it? And of course, in that case, I knew that I'd already asked the question. The answer was the ship was designed for that bridge, so I knew we'd make it.
Now, I think it's important to let everyone know that the new passport rules are in effect.
That's right. So January 23rd, the new passport rules finally went into effect. They basically say that anybody – so all this change is travel within the Western Hemisphere. So places you used to be able to go to and come back from in the Western Hemisphere, like Bermuda, the Caribbean, Mexico, Canada – where you used to be able to go with no passport, you now do need to have a passport if you're flying. Now, the rule has been delayed still till early 2008, tentatively, for people who are going on cruises and who are crossing the border by land. But passports are still recommended, as we've discussed before, because what if you take a cruise, let's say, from Fort Lauderdale to the Caribbean without a passport, which is still legal, and you need to fly back because of some kind of emergency? Well, now you're entering the U.S. by air and you need a passport. Now, the fact of the matter is that they are being a little bit lenient. Obviously, just because you're lacking a passport doesn't mean the U.S. government will keep you out of the country forever, but it does mean you'll have some delays and hassles at the border to get back in. So the message is get a passport.
Well, and we've been giving that advice for some time now, and I think anytime you're traveling anywhere, I carry my passport all the time because it's a good ID even here in the States.
Oh, it is, and it accelerates things. The passport's kind of the gold standard, so it's quicker, it's easier, it just makes life easier crossing the border. And furthermore, you get all those wonderful stamps from around the world. Gotta love that.
That's right. I've got books full of them.
I'm jealous. I have some catching up to do with you, apparently, Roy.
Well, I don't know. You do a fair amount of traveling, but I may have been at it a little bit longer. Now, what's interesting is, tell us about the PCL and NCL plugging into shore power at L.A.
Yeah, this is a great thing. This whole idea that when a ship pulls into a port, that it shuts down its engines and plugs into shoreside power instead, was started up in Juneau, Alaska, which had kind of a haze problem because of the geography up there.
Right.
And Princess actually started it up there, and now it's going to be coming to Los Angeles in 2008. So both Princess, whose ships already support the technology, and Norwegian Cruise Line have both committed that starting in 2008, when it's available from the port of L.A., that they, too, will shut down their engines when they arrive at L.A. and plug into shoreside power with what surely must be the world's biggest extension cord.
Can you imagine?
No, I love to see it. I haven't actually seen this done yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it at some point. It's got to be quite a bit of technology where you can actually hook up the entire ship to shoreside power and, you know, plug it in and unplug it when it leaves. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I would guess. And then what about the bill?
Well, you got to imagine that electric meter's little disc is spinning around at warp 9, wouldn't you think?
Boy, can you imagine? I would think I'd want to stand back from that meter.
I think so, but obviously this is a great thing. Having the diesel engines turned off is good. It's good for the environment, so good for them.
Yep, absolutely. And probably what they save on fuel, or it probably all balances out anyway in terms of cost. But as you say, there sometimes cost isn't really the factor. It has a lot to do with some other things, like, in fact, the environment.
That's right. Well, and it's good. The cruise lines undoubtedly had to make a major investment to even make this possible with their ships. I mean, can you imagine having to, like, retrofit this capability into the ships, which they've done? So.
Yeah, that's great. That's great news. Now, Crystal is getting on board with this trans-fats bandwagon, huh?
That's right. This is spreading. So Royal Caribbean announced they were going to phase out trans-fats, and now Crystal has announced not only are they phasing out trans-fats, but they just went cold turkey. They're trans-fat-free now. So they just decided that Crystal said that they had eliminated already trans-fats where they could over the years.
Right.
And so they decided that they were easily able to just say, well, that's it. Zip, no trans-fats anymore. And so they're using all kinds of interesting oils instead, like sesame seed oil, pumpkin seed oil, walnut seed, corn oil, and olive oils. In fact, they even have a kind of an oil concierge where you can have things. So, for example, if you want some sautéing done, they'll ask you perhaps if you'd like rosemary oil to add a rosemary flavor to whatever it is they're cooking up for you.
Yeah, well, that's all good. And we can all we need to do what we can to keep all of these things out of our
arteries.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, now that McDonald's has said they finally solved the problem of getting rid of trans fats, you figure nobody else has a leg to stand on anymore.
Right. Now, tell us about the ADA rules.
Yeah, this is interesting. In 2005, a ruling came down from the Supreme Court saying that the Americans with Disabilities Act could be applied to foreign flag cruise vessels.
Right.
And that was very important that ruling was made. But it didn't really do anything because there were no rules for cruise ships, no rules for anybody to follow. It just said, okay, now the ball can start rolling on this whole subject. And so what's happened now is that the federal government has put together proposed new rules for public comment that gives some more specifics around this. And examples of some of that, obviously a ship is a different environment than a hotel or anything else. So it can't, a ship will never be, I don't think, as easily accessible as a land-based resort could be. You know, for example, on ports that you tender to shore back and forth, it's just never going to be as easy. But here are some of the rules they did say that the proposed rules that should apply to ships. The rules would outlaw any price discrimination based on disability, so you can't charge more for a disability access stateroom.
Right.
Passengers wouldn't be required to provide advance notice that they're disabled unless traveling with 10 or more disabled people. And it also, the ADA also gives rights to people with medical conditions. So another rule proposed is saying that passengers with communicable diseases have to be allowed to sail unless the disease is both transmitted by casual contact and has severe health consequences. And then one of the more interesting ones is, in some cases, for safety purposes, the cruise line can require the disabled to travel with a personal assistant. But if the passenger doesn't want an assistant, then the cruise line can't charge extra for one. So these are the examples of some of the rules that are being proposed right now. Not in effect yet, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And obviously making ships as practically accessible to disabled people as possible is a great thing, too.
Well, it is very interesting because in the airline side of it, if there are not jetways at some airports, like for St. Pete, for example, it's very difficult to try and lift a wheelchair and up the stairs of an aircraft. So what they've done is, in some cases, is they use an elevated vehicle similar to what we would put the catering on with, and they wheel it onto that, and it's like an elevator. It just lifts them up, and they go in through the galley door. So there are ways to get, to adhere to some of these difficulties and overcome them. So it's good to see that people with handicaps have more accessible ways of getting around, including the curbs that have been balanced out and all of these things. Because before that, it was very difficult for them to get around.
Oh, that's true. And there's so many of these things, such as the improved curbs. They're such trivial things that add no expense or bother to anybody, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be done.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Now, let's just go to that situation where the PCL ship actually hit a whale, or possibly hitting a whale. That was in Alaska, I imagine.
It was in Alaska, yeah. Right. The circumstantial evidence is very suggestive that the ship did hit the whale, but the settlement, Princess just agreed to pay $750,000 to settle federal charges that a ship killed this whale without admitting that they actually did hit the whale, the typical kind of legal mumbo-jumbo.
Right.
So everybody's in agreement that the Dawn Princess in 2001 had a close encounter with two whales that were diving, coming up and going down, diving in front of the ship, and that they may have hit one of the whales. So people say that one of the whales didn't dive quickly enough as the ship was coming toward it. The ship didn't slow down, just maintained its course and heading. And then, 4 days later, a dead humpback whale was found near Glacier Bay that had massive skull fractures consistent with being hit by a ship. So put two and two together, there you are. And anyway, the company has agreed just to settle the matter, to pay $200,000 fine and to pay $550,000 to the National Park Service Foundation.
Well, it's interesting from a lot of aspects in that, what about people? Try to get a $750,000 claim for injuries in an automobile accident isn't as easy as hitting a whale, I guess, Not that I'm saying that there shouldn't be some regulation, but
I was going to ask Roy, where are you going with this exactly?
I'm not sure after I got into it, but it's a good thing that that we're looking after the environment, but how do you avoid something like a whale? I mean, it's just they're out there, and.
There's some common sense to be applied. I agree. Princess has said that they've given their captains whale avoidance training now. What that amounts to, I don't know, but, hopefully it'll help.
You
can't turn one of these cruise ships on a dime.
Yeah, exactly, and you just have to look for the water spouts, I guess.
Yep, so it seems.
Now, CCL is going to have a gambling tournament cruise, is that correct?
Yeah, they've done this every year for the past few years. Carnival has gone after the gambling market pretty aggressively. They have something they call the Ocean Players Club. So it's like a club you'd have in a casino, the frequent gamblers club. And they're going to have 20 slot and blackjack tournaments throughout 2007. The grand total prizes, when you add them all up, are over $100,000. So there are tournaments on a variety of cruise lengths, ranging from 3 to 8 day cruises, and then there is a grand final event on the new Carnival Freedom this November. So you've got all kinds of cash prizes you can win, and there are chances offered to win a free cruise on that grand finals cruise on the Carnival Freedom. So people who gamble, that's what a fun way to combine a fun cruise with.
Yeah, it's great and very popular on TV, obviously.
Oh, of course, yeah, absolutely.
Now, we're running out of time, but let's just cover one last item, and that is the norovirus is back again.
Oh, let's not.
Yeah.
No, norovirus is back again, and it's always around, and the last two ships to have a norovirus outbreak were the Cunard's Queen Elizabeth II and Holland America's Volendam. Now, the Queen Elizabeth, when I read that, I was a little more interested because Queen Elizabeth is in the middle of a world cruise, like a 106-night world cruise. So they don't have the opportunity quite as easily, for example, to pull that ship out of service for a couple of days,
right,
get everybody off between sailings, maybe cancel the cruise, and clean. They can't do it. And to their credit, they've been apparently handling it very well on board, just, you know, doing enhanced sanitation and cleaning on board the ship. And they report that, you know, none of the World Cruise passengers have wanted to get off the ship or anything like that. And meanwhile, the problem is solved. I mean, this happened, a couple of weeks ago, and since then the problem has been pretty much resolved.
Well, you know, that's good news. And, you know, there's stomach viruses all around, whether you're on the cruise ship or just traveling every day just around town. They're out there, and it's just that I think we're a little bit more aware of it because of the publicity they get on the cruise ships.
Well, that and the fact that cruise lines are required to report outbreaks to the Centers for Disease Control, unlike anybody else.
Right.
So that's why people think it's a cruise ship thing, whereas in truth, as you say, it's everywhere.
Exactly. Evan, it's great to be chatting with you again, and look forward to doing the same next week, and bye for now.
Excellent. Have a great rest of your show, Roy.
Thank you, Evan.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, Evan Eggers, and with the latest on our cruise news, and we're going to go to break, and when we come back, Amy Cuckin, director of the Smithsonian Journeys, will be with us, so hang in there.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, we're back, and Amy Cuckin is the director of the Smithsonian Journeys. And many of you may be a bit surprised, I wasn't really, but that the Smithsonian has a tour company. So we've invited the director of the Smithsonian Journeys to join us at Talking Travel today and tell us why and what it's all about. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, it's nice to have you here.
Great.
You know, when one thinks of the Smithsonian, we think of lots of things. However, I don't think most are aware that you've put it all to really good use and have applied some really in-depth journeys. And why don't we chat about that and tell us why the Smithsonian, if you will?
Sure. Well, the Smithsonian is the U.S. National Museum, and we're the repository for about 141 million things, ranging from beetles and bats to space capsules, airplanes, locomotives, etc. And in every case, what we have is the real thing, the authentic item.
Right.
Smithsonian is largely in one place in Washington, D.C., and with a couple of museums elsewhere and research stations. But over the years, what we've evolved are a lot of outreach activities that take the not only the objects, but the what we call the Smithsonian experience to people who don't live in Washington or who want a Smithsonian educational experience elsewhere. In the case of Smithsonian Journeys, what we do is bring the same quality of Smithsonian education that you would get by being in a museum on the Mall here in Washington, D.C., to trips that go around the world, literally to every continent, and they are all expert-led, and they all go to authentic and wonderful sites that really have a story to tell, much as the objects do in Washington, D.C. It's an outreach extension of our mission.
And all of these tours are escorted, is that correct?
That's correct. They are escorted by a knowledgeable expert, somebody we call a study leader. In some cases, we have a series of guest lecturers, but there is always a, you know, a lecture component to it that you're going to learn about, you know, classical Greece or Italian racing cars or Italian cooking or French wines, in a classroom situation, and then you go out and experience the real thing. So you're really well prepared for what you're going to see and what you're going to do.
And you also network with the local people, local experts, including museum curators and community leaders.
Absolutely.
So they get the full experience in this adventure, as you...
They really do, because you know, the Smithsonian has a network of contacts around the world, and certainly as the largest museum complex in the world, we are, our name, you know, often opens doors certainly to other museums. So our tours are enhanced by private tours of private collections, by tours of museum collections with the directors, with the curators, with the people who really know the most about the objects that they take care of. So there are a lot of advantages.
And you call it travel beyond the ordinary. I think that's a wonderful title.
We do. We definitely do. We think it's way beyond the ordinary, not only in our themes and destinations, but the way we deliver the experience that is expert-led. And I think another thing that makes the journeys sort of way beyond the ordinary is the kind of people who opt for a learning vacation of that type. We attract a lot of people who are very passionate about the subject that we are highlighting on particular tours, and they themselves become a resource for other people to learn from.
Right, and of course you get into the history, culture, and the arts and more in depth than that one would normally find in most tours, and,
yes,
and that's really the highlight of
it
of
is,
your signature, is it not?
Absolutely. Let me give you a couple of examples. One that I was on most recently, that was actually in New York, we had a four-day trip to the Metropolitan Opera. We saw four terrific operas, one each night. We had great seats. And every day we had a wonderful preparation for those operas by a terrific study leader, as we call him, somebody who's a real insider at the Metropolitan Opera. He, in turn, brought in guest experts, people who wrote for Opera News, et cetera. The whole experience was enhanced by having these pre-lectures. And then we would all go and have a drink at the bar after the opera,
right,
and discuss it further for another hour and a half. So the education just went on and on into the night, and people were really enthusiastic about it. I mentioned, too, that we're going to be doing a trip to Italy this spring that is specifically oriented on Italian automobile design. We'll be going to the Ferrari factory, we'll be going to Lamborghini, and some of the top design studios. And our expert there is somebody who has written several books on Italian racing cars and is a well-known author, and therefore has his own contacts that we are able to take advantage of. So it's that kind of access.
Now, tell us about your tour leaders. You call them study leaders. Is that what you
right.
call?
Yes, we call them study leaders, and they are people who are, you know, experts in the discipline that's being featured on the tour or the region. And these people are really carefully selected because we want them to be able to give, you know, good solid lectures, but they also are going to be just asked questions over breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and informally throughout the trip, because I think people who go on these trips are real curious about where they are, and they have to be the kind of people who really love that kind of constant stimulation and bombardment with questions. And you know, we choose people who actually get more and more enthusiastic as the tour goes, because they get energized by the kinds of questions they're asked. So they have to be great lecturers, and they also have to be terrific, engaging people, and that's what we look for, and that's what, you know, we've been fortunate enough to find for all of our tours.
Now, would you consider these cost-wise high-end, or is there a medium level as well?
There is. We try to have a variety of price points for our tours, and they range all the way from very expensive. We do private, you know, round-the-world jet tours down to three-day battlefield tours of Gettysburg and Vicksburg that are really not expensive at all. And we have a whole middling line of trips, international trips, called Smithsonian Journeys Travel Adventures, where the emphasis is on value. And in those cases, we have a series of lecturers who appear throughout the trips rather than the study leader. And these are local people who come in and talk about their area of expertise. And it allows us to price those a little lower. So it's really a whole gamut of prices.
Now, give us a sampling, if you will, of the types of accommodations one could expect on these tours.
Well, you know, again,
it's very varied, I'm sure, yeah.
Yes, vast range, but we, you know, all the way from, you know, just top five-star hotels in India to, you know, an occasional motel in some of our battlefield tours. But what we basically look for are accommodations that are very nice, very comfortable, not necessarily five-star, but very much reeking of the ambience of the city or town that we're in. We want it to have a local flavor. We want those hotels to be very well located so that if you want to strike out on your own and take a walk and explore on your own, you are not 5 miles outside of town.
Yeah,
that's very important.
I agree entirely, because that's the only way you can really get the true flavor of a destination. If you stay, I don't want to throw out a name brand, but if you stay in a name brand hotel, it's always the same. I mean, you wouldn't really know, except for maybe some decorations, that you were even away from home.
Exactly. So wherever possible, we like the smaller, locally owned hotels that are, you know, that have the ambience of the and the flavor of the region. And as you say, there's nothing like being able to get up early and take a walk outside yourself and do some exploration on your own. So you have to be in a place where you can do that. That's what we look for.
Right. And the other thing that you promote is being in good company. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I will just go back to my most recent experience in New York with the opera group. And boy, was that good company. There were 33 of us on that trip just before Christmas, and we had a lot of people who are very knowledgeable about opera. We had a lot of people who were newcomers to opera, but they were so enthusiastic about the program. They were so enthusiastic about meeting each other and becoming friends and sharing this experience together. And among those people who were there were at least six or seven people who had met on previous Smithsonian tours and had become friends and were sort of celebrating not only taking this next tour but seeing each other again. So I think because the tours are themed, we attract people who already have something in common with one another, and the friendships just build from there. And they're very, very outgoing, friendly people. We have a lot of single people on our trips, and I think they feel extremely comfortable. They know that when they come, they're going to make friends instantly, and there's going to be a real camaraderie.
Especially when you have similar interests, of course.
Exactly. That's really the key.
Now, the tours run year-round, is that correct?
Yes, they do.
And the selection is just ongoing. I mean, I'm looking at your list of destinations, and it would take another half hour just to go through them.
Right.
But the variety also is, you know, from land-based to ocean, as your ocean river cruises, trains, and of course, private jet, as you say. And of course, you do have family programs, is that right?
We do. We have a really interesting number of family programs, and we go to Galapagos, we go to Alaska, we go to the Mediterranean, and where the kids and their parents and grandparents study ancient Greece and Rome. This year we've introduced a Tanzania for Families program, and the study leader for that program is the head veterinarian at the Smithsonian's National Zoo here in Washington, one of the people who was, you know, instrumental in bringing us our wonderful panda pair. So she's taking time out from her responsibilities at the zoo and is taking families to Tanzania. We're very excited about that. So those attract children, parents, and in some cases grandparents. We have multi-generational trips going out.
Now, for those that are interested in taking your tours, how would they get this information?
Well, the very best and fastest way is to go to our website. In fact, this is very timely because we relaunched our new website last night. So we're very excited about it, and it has all of our tours up there, and you can, you know, you can spend some time on the site. It's SmithsonianJourneys.org, and that is the very fastest way to get in touch with us.
I'm looking at the site, and it looks great, Amy, and great. Thank you for taking the time to share this with our audience.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
A pleasure. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
We're going to go to break, and let's see. When we come back, we're going to be joined by travel journalist Kay Harwell Fernandez, who is always a pleasure to speak with, so hang in there.
Totally gone native. Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again. Oh,
yeah. I'm a traveling man. Well, a dream of a crystal cruise is the subject of travel journalist Kay Harwell Fernandez's article. Welcome, Kay.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm terrific, as usual. You know, you in your article, you quote Alfred Lord Tennyson, and it says, "Like glimpses of forgotten dreams," is the way you started off, and what a lovely way to start off your article. I think it was very moving. You're just an incurable romantic, Kate.
I am indeed. I am.
And then you lived the dream.
On that luxury cruise ship, too.
And then you went on to live the dream.
I did, yes. It was a wonderful cruise aboard Crystal. They have a tagline that says, "The difference is crystal clear." And I think that Crystal goes beyond that. It's almost a credo for them that everyone on board assures that your Crystal cruise experience is indeed different, and I did find that to be true.
Now, they have two ships. They have the Serenity and the Symphony, I believe.
Yes, they do. Both of them are fairly new ships. They're relatively small. I had the good fortune of being on board the Serenity, and they only have 548 staterooms, which... you know, the ships are smaller, and that makes them more intimate, and
right.
It makes for a very good experience.
Now, you flew to Venice to pick up the ship, I believe.
I did, indeed. This was a Mediterranean cruise, an 11-day Mediterranean cruise, with most of the ports of call in Italy, but we went to other very exotic places as well. But when we started off in Venice... you know, they picked us up at the airport. The check-in was just seamless. We were on board very shortly thereafter, and there they were with a glass of champagne welcoming us aboard the ship.
How nice.
It was very nice. I think one thing about the luxury cruises is that you have certain expectations that your experience is going to be at a level higher than, you know, most people are used to. And that in itself, I think, is a luxury to have that pampering.
Now, tell us about the accommodations.
All the staterooms are lovely. They have staterooms and penthouses. The penthouses are just maybe some additional square footage, but they all offer some wonderful amenities. They have luxurious bathrobes and Aveda toiletries and very nice duvets and Egyptian cotton linens. It's very nice. And unlike some of the medium-tier ships, they offer complimentary bottled water, soft drinks. They set you up with wine to get you started, and which is very nice. They have complimentary dining in your stateroom. The penthouses also have a separate jacuzzi tub, flat-screen TVs. They offer complimentary shoe shines and pressing, just, you know, most anything.
Well, just getting back to eating in your suite or in your cabin again, is it just like room service, or do you have to let them know the day before that you're going to take a particular meal in your cabin?
Well, again, we were extremely lucky that we were in a penthouse suite that had personal butler service.
Right.
And the butler was kind of at your beck and call, a very nice young man who was European trained. And you just push a button and you tell the gentleman what you would like and what time you would like it, and it's there before you can bat an eye.
And that's kind of nice, isn't it?
It's very nice.
You don't get to take him home, though, at the end.
No, and we missed the butler when we got home.
You mean you didn't ask your husband to put on a black tie and white gloves?
Oh, I didn't think of that. That would have been good.
Now, tell us about, you say in your article, the daily diversions seem endless. Walk us through that a bit.
Yes. You know, some people have this misconception that they might be bored on a ship. Well, I think that there's nothing further from the truth, and I've sailed a good many times. On the Crystal ships, they have, oh, goodness, they have so many special programs. They have guest lecturers, which can be very, very interesting. On our particular ship, they had a couple of guest lecturers who were talking about the Mideast. And my husband went to those lectures. They also offer seems like an endless number of classes.
Well, and then
and
you
these
say,
are all options. You don't have to take them, of course.
Right, and then, of course, the state-of-the-art fitness center, as many of them have, but I guess this was a little bit special.
Yes, you have a panoramic view of the ocean. And
which is lovely,
can,
yeah.
You almost forget that you're on that treadmill.
Right.
When you see the waves right around you, so you can exercise without even knowing you're doing it.
And
to
they
work
have
off
a,
that wonderful food.
And you say they have a well-stocked DVD library if you just want to.
They do. They have a nice, quiet library. It's I think 3,000 titles of books and
right
DVDs, and which is very nice. I like to curl up with a book myself because I seldom been able to read at home anymore.
Now, the Creative Learning Institute I found quite interesting, where you could take language classes, and in your case, I think that you took some Italian, and how did you make out with that?
It was a lot of fun. We had a great instructor. He made it a lot of fun for the class.
Right.
And you know, we didn't have to have homework necessarily, but we took three different classes. You know, because we had so many Italian ports of call, it was very nice to pick up a few sentences and phrases to use while we were, you know, in port. And
right
that was a lot of fun. And I also took a Yamaha keyboard class, which I had never done before. And, again, it was just a lot of fun.
Well, what's interesting is you mentioned that they have destination-specific lecturers come on board. And one of them you mentioned, interestingly enough, is the Smithsonian Institute, the educational arm of that. And the previous guest we just had on was the director of the Smithsonian Journeys.
Yes.
And I thought that was that was interesting. But I see more and more now where there is much more towards the literary end of it than just, you know, fun and games. And I think
yes
that's really wonderful.
I think these enrichment programs are. People are looking for many different things on a cruise, and part of it is a cultural diversion as well as the fun things, you know, like casinos and
and
sports and so forth. So I think it gives people a very broad spectrum to choose from.
Now, of course, they have a casino, I assume.
Yes, they do. They have a fun casino. They have wonderful shows in the Galaxy Lounge. They're Broadway-style productions. You have Juilliard graduates who are performers. It's just everything is just very first class, I would say, all the way.
Now, even to a point where they have a Hollywood theater, in fact, isn't it?
We had great fun in the theater. It was something that we certainly didn't expect. It was the cushiest movie theater I had ever been in.
Right.
And they offer first-run features on this, just a screen that's just like a movie theater. And then as soon as you sit down, there's someone to give you popcorn and your soda, and you sit and enjoy the movie. And it was fun, very different that you don't expect on a ship.
Now, how about the food?
The food.
We always get into that at lunchtime. It drives me crazy.
There is the dining room on board, and they have wonderful creations on their menus as well. And there are also two specialty restaurants. They have Silk Road and the Sushi Bar, plus they have Prego. And all of these just have wonderful food. Obviously, Prego has the Italian cuisine.
Right.
And Silk Road has the Asian fusion, which is created by Nobu, which is a very famous restaurant in L.A. And you have to make reservations for these restaurants, but there's no additional charge.
And, of course, Wolfgang has some of his stuff on the menu, I'm sure.
Yes, Wolfgang Puck, and his menus can't be beat, that's for sure.
Now, in addition to the specialty restaurants, tell us about some other dining options.
If you want to be more casual, and there's always those times when you come back from port and you just want to relax a little bit, there's a Trident Bar and Grill, which is right next to the pool. And they have a great menu, including, of course, fresh seafood that you can choose from.
And did you have some favorites?
I always love seafood. And a couple of things I think I mentioned in my article. They had a pistachio-crusted goat cheese tower with sun-dried tomatoes and a pesto vinaigrette.
And you also mentioned grilled grilled rosemary and garlic marinated lamb chops, which got my mouth watering.
Yes, my husband really liked that. And that's served with the white bean mashed potatoes, which is very interesting. And it comes topped with an onion triangle, tomato, and Kalamata olives. And it's served with eggplant parmesan and a wine gravy that's just delectable.
Now, the other thing that you mentioned, which I think is of particular interest in cruising, is that Crystal is not all about atriums and the usual. It's more about it's more about the down homey, woody feeling rather than what
right.
one is normally used to.
Right. There's no glitz. There's no neon.
Right.
There are no distractions like that. It's very warm. The woods are warm. It's, I would say, understated elegance. They're gold tones and some deep reds. And it's very welcoming. Again, very sophisticated and classy. And you can go into the atrium and you hear a pianist in the background playing, soft melodies, classical music, and nothing boring, but still just to kind of to set the tone that you're kind of in a sophisticated environment. But it's not pretentious, though.
Now, let's touch on ports of call, if you will, and on your particular cruise. And then, of course, how those that are interested can contact Crystal Cruises.
Sure. Our Mediterranean cruise, as we mentioned, started off in Venice. And we went to Dubrovnik, Croatia, and Corfu, Greece, which were wonderful ports to call, and also Naples and a place outside of Florence, and we had to take transportation into Florence, and to the wonderful Monaco, which is just outstanding. It's such a clean, impeccably clean place and very enjoyable.
And
we ended up in a port not far from Rome.
And you mentioned before going ashore, during the ports of call, that they have very knowledgeable staff and special shore excursions.
The shore excursion desk is just excellent. They know the ins and outs, and they can give you recommendations even if you don't want to take a shore excursion and go off on your own. They're extremely helpful and knowledgeable, and you always feel confident with their recommendations. And if you do go on an organized shore excursion, they're with you from beginning to end. They don't leave you hanging. There's transportation. They're extremely organized.
And if you would like to read Kay's article more in depth, you can go to ttrn.com, and you will find it there. And Crystal Cruises, I might add, is, if you want to go online, it's www.crystalcruises.com. That's easy enough, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Kay, thanks again. Always a pleasure.
We've got to run,
and we thank you for sharing this information with our audience.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it, as always.
Pleasure. Bye for now.
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to go to break, and as I say, along with photographs, Kay's article is up on our website. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Sandra Finney, who's going to take us on a Destination Canada trip, so stay with us.
This is the story of Mary and Larry. They had cabin fever so bad it was scary.
We need a vacation, a place warm and sunny, a place that's fun for not much money.
Let's escape the cold and the snow. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary, Chicago.
Sky Value now offers great rates from convenient Gary, Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete, Fort Lauderdale, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary, Chicago Airport works for me. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Sky Value. You sure saved us money.
You're so smart.
And so is my honey.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after. Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
Well, we're back in our continuing series of Destination Canada. Falling in Love with Train Travel Again is the title of travel journalist Sandra Feeney's article. Welcome to Talking Travel, Sandra.
Hi, Roy. How are you today?
We're having a very romantic show today, Falling in Love with a Train. How wonderful.
Well, that's very appropriate, seeing that Valentine's is just around the corner.
You're absolutely right. And what was interesting is the way you start out your article. You were saying that English author and critic Edward Forster once said, "Railway terminals are our gates to the glorious and the unknown. Through them we pass out into adventure and sunshine. To them, alas, we return." What a wonderful thing.
Isn't that a darling quote?
Yeah, I love train stations. I love taking the train from London to Gatwick, from Old Victoria Station. And I can remember when I first went over there many years ago, and I got onto one of their trains, and it was something out of one of these exotic, mysterious movies where, you know, you close the sliding door and somebody knocks on it and asks you for your passport. And, you know, the Second World War spy is trying to, you know, hide his identity. Anyway, I'm getting carried away. But it's a wonderful article, and tell us more.
Well, the funny thing was, Roy, I hadn't been on a train for 40 years, and I mentioned in the article I don't know why, and I don't know why.
neither here or there. But it was kind of a serendipitous thing happened. I happened to be in a restaurant in Halifax with some travel writers, some colleagues, and the sommelier was telling us about this new class of travel that was being sponsored by Via Rail. And it's something they run through June, July, August, September, October, in the summer months, late spring, summer, early fall. And they always have a run that goes 6 days a week from Halifax to Montreal and onward. But this particular one, it was just a kind of an added run that they put on. It's called the Easterly Class. And it's really special because it's so interactive. There are animators on board, and they take you, on little journeys, like mini journeys, as you're doing your train ride. So it could be a wine tasting opportunity in the lounge. It could be a demonstration about a lobster trap and the lobster industry in Atlantic Canada, which is so huge. It could be just little vignettes and stories as you're passing through towns and villages en route from Halifax to Montreal to hear stories about the history and the culture and little anecdotes. So it's quite involved, and it's so social, and it's so much fun. It's like being on a family expedition for 20 hours. It was wonderful. It was just magical.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because Bob Fisher and I spent about 12 hours on the on a train through the Mexico desert, and it was a wonderful experience, so I can definitely identify with what you're talking about. Now let's for our audience sake, the train is called the Ocean Limited. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And it goes back to, what, 1904 or something?
Yes. It's been going for over 100 years from Halifax to Montreal.
Right.
Nonstop service, including during the war. And it has many, many features. It used to run a lot of cargo and, of course, the mail in the early days. The Eaton's catalog, people may be fairly familiar with that. So there were a lot of things that were quite critical to communities to get. Food and produce and agricultural things and post office services and on and on. So the ocean provided that service way back in the early 1900s. And it's still going strong today. Of course, it doesn't have the cargo component. The cargo are human beings like us. But it's just a great service. And I'm just so glad that I found it again. It's just, I really have fallen in love with this train travel. And just as a little aside, I'm taking the train again, and on Valentine's Day, the 14th, and going to London, Ontario. A bit further journey, it's 30 hours, but I'll tell you, I just can't wait.
How wonderful.
Mm-hmm. But I think you probably found the same thing, Roy, when you were traveling by train, that you really can let down. You're not worrying about connections. You're not worrying about some weather pretty well. You're not worried about your next meal, where it's going to come from, because you know there's a dining car and you know there's going to be wonderful food. And it's just such a relaxing, relaxing way to travel.
And without the anxiety of checking at the airport, going through all of that stuff, and you're absolutely right.
You need to meet new people, and I made new friends that are still friends right now. We correspond, and it's just delightful.
That's exactly the way we found it, going through the Copper Canyon. Not only was the view extraordinary, but the service was great. The food was wonderful.
Yes.
And so it was terrific, and I agree. It's a great way to travel. Now, you mentioned in your article there was a person on board called the Learning Coordinator.
That's right.
And so they, as you pass through all of these towns and villages, they could just chat about the areas you were passing through and explaining the history.
The Learning Coordinator would be much like a guide. If you were on tour in a town or a city and you hired a guide to take you through to highlight certain things and, you know, fill you in with information about the history and the culture of a community or a city.
Right.
So really she was our guide, and we had her from the time we stepped on board to the time we left. And so she was always around, and sometimes she did very proactive things, demonstrations, and we would know ahead of time when the wine demonstration was going to be or when she was going to discuss a particular community. And then at other times, you know, we could just roam around on our own, go upstairs in this magnificent domed car, which you just could see forever. And so you had the choice to be, you know, by yourself, have lots of privacy, find little places just to relax or read or watch a movie, or you could talk with her privately by yourself, ask as many questions as you wanted, and sometimes, as I mentioned, she would have these hands-on demonstrations or planned programs during the journey.
And you say many of these get-togethers took place in what you referred to as the park car, and there's also a large common area, much like a living room, and the smaller, more intimate room that also serves as a bar.
That's it, uh-huh. And the park car is the very end of the train, so you not only have this in wonderful living room area, you can look back, you can look on both sides, there are lots of windows, and directly above that is the dome car, or the observation deck. And again, that would be just like sitting in a very high, swanky bus with completely glass windows totally surrounding you. Oh, it's quite awesome. Beautiful.
Well, and as you mentioned, it brings people together because, as I recall, we sat in this living room type area, which in fact was the bar car, but it was situated so we could sit around and chat. So for 8 or 9 hours, we just talked about things that we probably would have never had an opportunity to do just on a tour or on an airplane. You're only going to get into so much conversation with the person in the next seat. And it was a marvelous experience from that aspect.
Well, you certainly can get to know people at a different level.
Yep.
And it's much like having someone in your home where you're chatting, and it's much more intimate. And it's wonderful. I met this gentleman, Nelson, who in fact had been on a train as a porter for 42 years. Imagine that.
My Lord.
And he had been on that train on the ocean, which brought him into Montreal, and then he went on, and he worked right across Canada, back and forth for 42 years. It was wonderful. I loved hearing his stories. And aside from his wealth of information about train travel and Canadian history, he's also an avid cook, so he shared with me some recipes, and I've done them at home since. It was pure delight, and that wouldn't have happened on a plane. Planes have their own charm, and certainly they're fast and efficient and all that good stuff, but I've never met people where I felt that I had time to develop a relationship and really communicate.
And what was also interesting is that you'd met someone else who had a phobia about flying, and yet his wife worked for an airline.
Isn't that funny?
That is really amusing.
That in the story. That was so hysterical.
I loved
it. And again, a chap who's now become a friend, and we correspond, and he has this wonderful used bookstore, and he's just a sweetheart. But he is fearful of flying, never could get in a plane, and his wife works for an airline. Too funny.
Yes.
Anyway, they've worked it out.
And she flies, and he takes the train, and they meet at whatever destination.
That's right. Yeah.
That's a terrific story.
Yeah. He's now, still working on her to get on the plane. She knows on the train. I think she's given up on him, knowing that it's just not going to happen.
Right.
But he's still working on her to get on the train, and I think that's going to happen this year.
Well, that's a great story. But the other interesting thing that you point out is that you can also have time to yourself and
yes.
lots of privacy yes. if you so elect to do that.
It was so relaxing. I felt as if I were on vacation, and I don't have many vacations where I can just do nothing. So if I want to twiddle my thumbs, look out a window, put my feet up, have a snooze, have a nap, that doesn't happen a lot in my life.
Right.
So to have, you know, it was almost, it was really a day and a half, and so I had plenty of opportunity just to have some downtime and time with myself. And that was very special, very, very special, just to totally relax. And I read a little bit, and I got in, snuck in probably two naps in there, which was, I mean, I haven't done that since I was a kid, Roy.
Well, well deserved, I'm sure. Now, we have did a little less than a minute left, but tell us about getting the little tricky tip that someone gave you about walking around the train. I think it's hilarious.
One of the staff, because I was having difficulty, as many people do on a train, you kind of roll back and forth. Even on the smoothest of journeys, you're bound to be kind of bumping into the alleyways and the galleys and whatnot, because there's not a lot of space in those little alleyways. Anyway, here's the tip. Relax your knees, bend them a little bit, turn your left foot to 10 o'clock and your right toe to 2 o'clock. So, and then walk. So, knees relaxed, bend a little bit, and just turn your toes out a little, and you might feel a bit like a duck.
Yeah, I was just going to
say. Waddling down the aisles, right. But trust me, you won't be banging around. It's great.
I just tried that, and I do seem to be walking like a duck.
Uh-huh.
Kay, we've got to run, but just, if you will, how does one get in touch with the ocean train experience if they elect to go?
Oh, I could wring my own neck here. I don't have that right in front of my nose, but please,
well, there's
let's
a
get
link.
Everybody to go to the website,
right.
Talking Travel, and
yes.
To go to my article, because
right.
There's a direct link to Via Rail, there's a direct link to the Easterly class,
right.
And there's tons of information about this amazing, amazing train that you can board in Halifax and go right to Vancouver.
And it's a great article, and we certainly encourage you all to read it more in depth by going to the website, and interestingly enough, some super photos.
Thank you.
And Kay, it's always a pleasure, and we thank you for sharing your experience and your article with our audience.
Well, this has been great fun, Roy. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
Happy Valentine.
Thank you, my dear. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It was the first time I've been wished a happy Valentine so far this season. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, Michelle Newman's going to be with us, and she is going to take us on a very interesting little art journey, so stay with us.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, we're back, and Michelle Newman is with us once again to share another one of her artful journeys. This time she's going to take us to Malaysia's Batik Week. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Roy. How are you? We are going to go to Batik Week. You're right.
It's Batik, not Batik, huh?
Batik.
Well, but let me say this. You know, you ask any man,
mm-hmm.
and of course he'll know that, and of course he'll immediately tell you it's what Mama Cass wore in the 70s, or maybe... Would it be something that you'd wrap around your head while riding your Harley?
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
From a man's point of view, anyway.
Initially, it's funny you said that, because in India, many, many, many centuries ago, if not thousands of years ago, when they were originating batik in that part of the world, banderas, that word comes from, you know, a bandera that you wear, is from the Indian word, and it was usually a batik fabric that was made into a kerchief that you wore on your head.
See, so we men are not all that dumb, you know?
That's right.
We know about this stuff.
That's right. We're getting sexist here, aren't we?
I know.
What batik? Okay, you're the guy. You're macho men, or they know, have all the answers. Do you know what batik really is, how the process works?
Well, I do a little bit from reading your article, but why don't you tell the audience, since I'm so well informed?
Okie dokie. Well, basically, batik is what's known as a resist process in the world of textiles. And what that means is you can batik on wood, fabric, or paper. And what is done is wax, beeswax and paraffin is taken and it's melted. So it's in a molten state. And then it is painted on a piece of white fabric or light-colored fabric. And wherever the wax is brushed on the surface of the fabric, when you immerse that piece of fabric into a bucket of dye or a vat of dye, every place that you've painted it with hot wax will resist the dye.
Right.
So it will stay white. And then you would dye whatever color is there. It would dye all around the wax part, but not the wax. Then you remove it from your dye pot, let it dry, and it's a sequential process where you work from light to dark. So then you would re-wax the part that you want to stay a pale color, re-dip it in the dye, remove it. And this process is a layering technique, an additive technique. And then the wax is removed after the piece is finished by boiling the wax, or in the U.S., batik artists send it to the dry cleaners, but they don't have batik artists. You know, they don't have too many dry cleaners like in Bali or Malaysia who do that. It's done in home studios, village workshops, and the wax is boiled off in a matter of just minutes. It floats to the top. And that's how beautiful designs of fabric and patterns are created.
Well, let me just say, for those that are listening to the show online, if you go to Michelle's article, there's some fabulous photos because she just takes some incredible photographs. And if you can sort of follow this process that she's explaining to you. And of course, there's a big difference between this and what we know in the United States as tie-dye, of course.
Oh, totally. Tie-dye does not use wax. But what's really impressive is that centuries ago, thousands of years ago, this process started in that part of the world, in India, Indonesia, Malaysia, and they've even found remnants of batik fabrics in some of the Egyptian tombs. And even today, batik is still done in these countries, and it's also done in Africa, China, Japan, Indonesia, and Malaysia. And what's really interesting is there's a major difference between Indonesian and Balinese batik and Malaysian batik.
In terms of colors or just design? Or
all of the above. The Indonesian batik is the true, genuine, authentic batik. It's very elaborate, it's very traditional, and it's very labor intensive and very, very detailed and very tiny. But like I said, it's very traditional. Now, you come over to Malaysia, which is not too far from Indonesia, you're going to find their batiks are looser, freer, brighter colors, more fashion-forward, more contemporary, more avant-garde. But yet, they use the same technique of brushing the hot wax on, either with a brush or a tool that's called a shanting tool. And if you want to see some spectacular images, if you go to www.klib.com. That was for the World Batik Conference. That's also going to be in Kuala Lumpur in December 2007. And another fabulous source for batik is the Malaysian government, unlike our government, supports the arts and supports the artists. The Minister of Culture is extremely interested in supporting the arts and the traditions and the culture and heritage of their country. And they actually train their artists and send them to a 3-year university where they can learn batik and other indigenous crafts, native crafts, free.
Now that, you know, that...
It's amazing.
Yeah,
and
well,
they also, I mean, it's just astounding. And they also set them up in a art incubator program. And what's really impressive is the Malaysians take so much pride in their batik heritage, and there's a tremendous revival. And batik is a very big business in Malaysia.
Well, it's interesting because, for a number of reasons, but this also falls back to what you do when you were teaching different art forms and home business type things to the Indian,
exactly.
The Blackfeet people. So, I mean, this is a lot. This obviously must have fascinated you when you say, gee, this is exactly what I've been talking about in the States.
Oh, it was fabulous. As a matter of fact, I worked very, very closely with Dato Zakia Ahmed. And she is the director of, well, at that time she was the director of Kraftanang, which is the government-sponsored arts and crafts program and exquisite art galleries where you can find all of the native handcrafts throughout Malaysia. And Dato Ahmed arranged for me to travel throughout Malaysia and visit all of the major batik centers. I spent a month there studying batik and actually hands-on batik with the village women and also in some of the larger batik studios. I mean, there are some, Nur Afa, for instance, she has a major business, I mean, a huge business. She's even on their version of Malaysian shopping network selling her batik items, her batik clothing and textiles. So you have anything from the small village studio into Paris Couture Runway. I can't begin to tell you how fashion-forward the new Malaysian designers are. And there are three women who are very, very, very responsible, who've done an outstanding job in Malaysia of continuing the heritage of Malaysian batik. And one is the Prime Minister's wife, the departed, the former Datin Sri Endon. And she was responsible for reviving batik in a major scale and impressed the Malaysians to wear batik every Friday, to wear batik, to wear an article of batik clothing to instill their sense of heritage. And as I also mentioned, Dato Zakia Ahmed, who is now the Secretary of Culture and Heritage and Arts, she's also played a major role in promoting batik, and this is something dear and close to her heart. And then Puan Lila Mohammed Ali, who is the CEO of KLIB, is also very, very involved with Stephen Doss, who is the director of promoting batik. And their goal is to put batik, Malaysian batik, on a world-class basis.
Now, did you actually attend a fashion show while you were there?
Yes, I attended the KLIB, which was the International Batik Festival. I kid you not, I have been to fashion shows in Paris and New York during Fashion Week. This fashion show rivaled anything you would see on the Paris Couture runways. Yes, it was spectacular.
And you said even the King and Queen of Malaysia were there.
Oh, my gosh, I got to meet the King and Queen. I did, and they were wearing batik outfits, of course.
And you as well?
Yes, I bought, I don't want to tell you how much money I spent on Malaysian batiks.
How wonderful. They have this educational organization.
Kraftanang.
That's what it's called. Okay.
It's hard to say.
Well, you know, you're doing very well. Is that a little bit of leftover Hebrew or?
Arabic and Hebrew, you know, it's that sound.
Yeah, you get that guttural sound.
Yeah,
you're doing very well. So the students and emerging artists are provided with the necessary skills to become financially and self-sufficient and independent,
yes.
And that's what it's all about.
Yes, and I was especially honored because Dato Zakia Ahmed invited me and sent me to actually attend the Craft Institute, and I had a personal tour of this institute, seeing all of the different indigenous crafts. We spent most of the time in the batik studios, but the education that these students are getting, there's no place else in the world that has any program similar to this. And the Malaysian government's commitment to keeping their arts alive and helping their people develop their economy and continue these cultural heritage arts is so impressive. And I was also invited by Dato to come and teach for a semester at the Craft Institute to show some of my contemporary techniques of batik, to include that into their repertoire. So I was extremely honored, you know, to have that invitation extended to me.
That's wonderful. Now, just getting back to the Institute again. So
yes.
The students are giving part of the tuition, the supplies and materials are all provided. And
not part, Roy.
All of it, right. And they're given a monthly allowance as well.
Yes, and they get to stay on campus. And then they also give them incubator money and teach them entrepreneurial skills of how to set up a business
right. And
run the business. And then once they're out of school, they also get a certificate or a diploma. And after that, there's a regimented program they go through, so they learn all about the various batik techniques, because you could brush wax on, you could stamp it on with a metal printing block, or you can use a specific needle-like tube that you draw the design on with the hot wax. And they also teach the students how to do what's known as natural dyeing, where you're using plant and natural sources for your dyes rather than chemical dyes. So they get an amazing background. I want to go to school there.
They must have been quite impressed with your artistic ability and just of the interest and the enthusiasm that you show in everything you do. I'm sure they were impressed by that.
Well, I've been batiking since I'm 16, and I learned how to batik in high school. Mr. Marinaccio put a shanting tool, which is the tool that you use to batik with, when I was 16, and ever since that time, I was hooked. And I'm actually writing my second book on batik, and I was doing some research about batik while I was in Malaysia, and I just can't wait to get back. It's a very, very special place.
How exciting. Now, just one more time, because we're just about out of time here.
Yes.
Would you just repeat some of the links that they can go to get more information?
Yes.
I'm looking at the bottom of your... I can repeat them if unless you have them in front of you.
Well, the first one would be
the history of
www.klib.com.
Yeah. Okay.
And you have Krof Dagan, and that's a little tricky to spell, so I'll let you spell that one.
Okay. Is it the one with the university, you mean?
It could be www.krastagan.com. If not, people can contact me at michellenewmandesigns@hotmail.com, and I can provide them with that link.
Great. Michelle, that's super. And once again, we encourage you to go to Michelle's article. She has some great photos, a lot of color. And you'll be very impressed, I'm sure.
And invite everybody to KLIB in Kuala Lumpur in December 2007.
And they can get that information on that website.
Sounds great, Roy.
Michelle, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. My pleasure as well.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Michelle Newman. She's a very artistic lady and a lot of fun, and it's always a pleasure to have her on the show. We're going to run, and... you're listening to Talking Travel, the voice of travel on the World Dining and Travel Network and TTRN.com. You can locate your favorite guest by going to our program schedule icon at TTRN.com. My guest next week will be Evan Eggers, Bonnie and Bill Neely, Suzanne Wright, who is the Wonder Woman, and Karen LePerry. Until then, this is Roy Lowy wishing you happy travels.
You've been listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Visit our website at ttrn.com for complete show archives and interviews with guests like Chris Elliott, Peter Greenberg, Bob Fisher, Johnny Jett, and many other great travel professionals. Don't forget to tune in live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for more Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends.